I'm Bob, and I am an alcoholic. 2218 Squad 77. Dustin is sitting over here saying, firing line, firing line. So, firing line as well. The first day that I did not drink was March 18th, 1968. So I just collected a medallion that says 40 on it. You know, 40 in Roman numerals is XL. Some kind of a fashion statement, right? I'll get to that. That's kind of how I got here. I am an alcoholic. I know what it's like to be powerless over alcohol. I think my experience is probably different from a lot of you. So I want to assure you that I know what it's like to be powerless over alcohol. I had an uncle when I was a kid, my dad's older brother. And my dad was not a drinker, but Uncle Ray would feed me beers when, you know, I'm 10, 11 years old. I think he just did it to irritate my dad. But so I probably had a beer or two or three here and there. But the first time I got drunk, I was 13 years old. The first time I got drunk, I drank to a blackout. I can honestly tell you that from that day until March 18th, 1968, I never ever had one drink. Never had one drink. I many times had 30 drinks, but I never had one drink. So, powerless over alcohol. And I would kid myself. I should tell you that I've been a musician my whole life. Now, you know, if you're a musician, you not only drink at work, you're kind of expected to drink at work. You drink all the time. There's no consequence for drinking. There's no consequence for drinking on the job. We had a consequence one time for not drinking on the job. I remember one night the manager of the band that I was playing in had said, "You guys are all drinking too much. We've got to stay sober tonight." And the leader came on the bandstand and he listened to a couple of tunes. This is a big band. I'm going back a ways here. This is not rock and roll. This is a big band. The leader listened to a couple of tunes and he said, "What's wrong?" And the manager said, "Well, I told him not to drink." He says, "Nah, forget that. Cut the set. Everybody hit the bar." Because the band didn't sound good. Didn't sound right to him. So I did not have a lot of consequences from drinking. Had some bad luck. But nothing that looked like consequences. I drove drunk a lot. I'm very sorry to say that. I apologize to everybody that I drove drunk. I never had a DUI because I generally would hit something before the cops ever got there. So I crashed a lot of cars. I have an experience in common. I heard a speaker yesterday from out of town, and he was talking about crashing a lot of cars. I crashed a lot of cars. I totaled 2 brand new cars in 1 year. So I had a lot of experience with insurance companies too. I've had 10 or 12 different insurance companies in my driving career. I don't do that anymore. I haven't hit anybody in a long time. I never, thank you God, I never hurt anybody. I never killed anybody. Almost killed myself a couple of times, but I never hurt anybody else driving. I am very grateful for that. I know a guy who was involved in an accident that took someone else's life, and it's a very, very, he's sober and he's gotten through it, but it's a very, very heavy price to pay. I'm very blessed that I did not ever kill anybody. But I'm trying to not do too much drunkalog here. There are some funny stories. I'll be happy to tell you some funny stories if you want to hear some funny stories later on. Some tragic stories too, but you know, when you're a professional drunk, I used to kid myself that I don't have to drink. People would say to me, "You know, Bob, people are always telling me I drank too much." Now, what do you do with this? My best drinking buddy told me that I drank too much. What do you do with that? People would say, you know, but you've got a drinking problem, Bob. I said, no, I'm really good at drinking. And stopping is the problem. I don't have a drinking problem. But I knew in my soul that I was an alcoholic. And I would kid myself that I don't have to drink. I'm not a drunk. I don't have to drink. I can go for weeks at a time and never drink. And when I do a little fact-finding, fact-facing, honest look at it, I probably would have maybe 2 days. I was essentially drunk for about 15 years. Pretty much. Day or two here and there. Bottle by the bed. Couldn't, you know, and we're traveling and we're living in hotel rooms, and so you got to find a cabbie who can get you a jug at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and jug on the bed table and have a couple of good blasts in order to be able to get up. You guys know what I'm talking about. We've been there. So I know what it's like to be powerless over alcohol. I did not know the significance of March 17th. I imagine a lot of you guys do. I'm not Irish or Catholic. I was brought up a Methodist. I always felt like we did the best we could, but so I didn't know that St. Patrick's Day was a good day to drink. Every day for me was pretty much a good day to drink, so I was doing all right. But I was in Omaha, Nebraska, and I was visiting my friend Ron. And my friend Ron was the number one drinking buddy who used to tell me, and we drank together. We're right here in St. Paul, not too far from here. He had a recording studio here for years. And we would get two bottles. We'd get a quart of really good quality gin and a quart of really good quality vodka and pour them together. That's a California martini, and you just drink that stuff. And we'd polish that off and go find some more. And so this guy's telling me that I drink too much. So I'm down in Omaha, Nebraska. He's moved down there. He has a recording studio down there. And I'm visiting Ron. And St. Patrick's night, I decide that I'm going to go out and have a few drinks. Ron decided not to go that night, so I take off by myself. I'm in a strange town. I went back a few years ago and traced my route because I remembered the bars that I started in, and then I got past about five bars, and then I couldn't remember where I was anymore because I was completely blacked out. Then I got back to Ron's house, and the car was in one piece, and it was actually parked in front of the house, so I was kind of amazed at that. But I go in, and I go to bed in the guest room, and I light a cigarette, and I fall asleep. And I set the bed on fire. And Ron smelled the smoke and apparently heard me coughing. There was a bedroom and a bathroom and a bedroom, so he went in the bathroom, and he got the wastebasket full of water. And he came in the guest room, and he jerked the door open, threw the water on me, and then pulled me out of the room. Excuse me. And I had a Bill Wilson experience. I had the most amazing experience. I had been in that bed in a blackout for maybe 5 minutes. I was talking at a meeting one time, and I said 15 or 20 minutes, and there was a medical doctor at the meeting, and he came up to me afterwards. He said, if you were in a smoke-filled room and you're coughing and there's no oxygen, because it wasn't in flames because there was no oxygen to start a fire, he said, not 15 minutes, 5 minutes maybe, and you're dead. So 5 minutes from a blackout. I'm standing in the hall with Ron, underwear, soaking wet, stone sober. Stone sober. And it was a flash of, you know, I didn't have a big flash of light. I had a flash of understanding or a flash of awakening or something. And it was gone. The compulsion to drink alcohol was gone, and it's never come back. It was taken from me that day. I was just talking to Ron the other day on the phone, and he said, you know what you did that night? He said, you're standing there soaking wet, and you say to me, you're not going to believe this, but I need a cigarette. So, Okay. Well, I didn't say I was sane. I said I was an alcoholic. So that was the end of drinking. I did quit smoking a few years later, too, but that was the end of drinking that night. And it was the most amazing feeling that came over me. I did not have a spirit talk to me or anything like that. It was just, Bob, you are done. And it was gone. Well, now, you guys come to Alcoholics Anonymous to learn how to stop drinking, right? So I didn't have to do that because I had stopped drinking. So I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I kid about this when we do workshops, but the Alcoholics Creed, my life sucks and it's all your fault. This is the my life sucks and it's all your fault part. Now I'm this sober guy, okay? And I'm doing well in business. And I'm making pretty good money. And years go by and I become more and more successful, doing better and better. I'm driving a Mercedes. That's a story in itself, how I had to have the Mercedes. I almost beat up on a friend of mine one night because I was trying to convince him that I had to have this Mercedes. Terrible big shot complex, you know, I had to be a big shot. And I had an older Mercedes anyway. This guy said, you already got a Mercedes. No, I got to have this new one because it's flashy and everybody will know. I got to drive it to work at the studio where I work, where I park in the alley, and anybody that comes to the studio would think that I took the bus because they can't see my car. But you know, I got to have this alcoholic thing, you know, I got to have this deal. So, but I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing pretty well. I'm making money, more money than I ever made before or since. And I have a nice home. I have a, why she ever went with me, I'll never know, but a much younger, very attractive girlfriend. And having a great life. And everybody's telling me how successful I am. The American dream. Bob, you're doing so, man, I envy you. You're doing so good. You're making all this money, and you got that nice house, and travel whenever you feel like it, and oh boy. And I was so miserable. I literally could not stand my life. I realized what I'm doing when I'm drinking. Because see, alcohol was not my problem. Alcohol was never my problem. I think all of us might even share in that consensus that alcohol is not our problem. The big book's pretty clear that alcohol is a symptom of the problem. It's not the problem. The problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our trouble. So I think what the alcohol did for me, because when I was a little kid, I was always kind of miserable, and I was always, all my friends were older than me, so I was the gopher, you know, I was kind of got pushed around. And the first time I got drunk, when I drank to a blackout, I was sick in bed for 3 days. I got home, my dad just took one look at me and he took me and he threw me in my bed and stuck a bucket by the bed and shut the door, and I was sick in bed for 3 days. And it was great. Remember? It was wonderful. What I'm doing when I drink is trying to escape the monster. That's what I'm doing. Trying to get away from the monster. So, I'm sober, or I'm not, you know, you can, whatever your definition of sober is. Sober would be defined as I'm not consuming alcohol. If you want to define it a little more critically than that, then I'm dry. But in any case, I'm not drinking. And I'm being successful, and life is going well, and I'm miserable. And this is going on for quite a long time. And I knew a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had some friends who were in AA. And my son got into AA. My son Joe got into AA. And he was going to go to a meeting. And I knew that open meetings meant that even though I'm not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can come to the open meeting. I thought, you know, I'm going to go to the meeting with my son, and he's going to get a medallion. He's going to get a 30-day medallion. And his sponsor was kind of a good guy. I hadn't seen his sponsor in a long time. We were doing a workshop out at Waverly, and Joe's first sponsor, who was also named Joe, showed up. I hadn't talked to him in quite a while. So I'm going to go to the meeting and say some nice stuff about my kid when he gets his 30-day medallion. So we go to this church, and we're skulking around the hallways in this church, and I'm kind of poking around. Joe's kind of embarrassed because I'm being dad boss, running the show and doing all that stuff. But we find a room about like this, and there's a circle of chairs, and there's a woman in there arranging chairs. And I come to the door, I stick my head in, and I say, "Is this where the meeting is?" "Yes, this is the meeting. Come on in, come on in, this is the meeting." I said, "Oh, good. I'm here to help my son get his 30-day medallion for sobriety." And she looked kind of funny, and she said, "Are you looking for the AA meeting?" "Yeah, isn't this the meeting? I'm looking for the AA meeting." She said, "It's up those stairs and around that corner." "Well, what is this?" "Oh, this is OA." "Come on in." She's looking at me. "Come on in." So that's where the XL comes in, all right? So I went upstairs, and I went to the AA meeting with Joe, and we went out for some coffee afterwards, and Joe and his sponsor, Joe, so I got two Joes now. I'm surrounded by Joes. They're just giving me a terrible raft of stuff about, "Think your higher power is talking to you there, Pops?" Because that was part of why I was miserable. I was, if you can believe it, I was bigger than I am now. And that was part of the misery, was being powerless over that still, you know. So I made a commitment to go back to that OA meeting. And the next week I went back to that OA meeting, and there were about five guys at the meeting who decided that they were having a little food issue and went to OA for a matter of a couple months, I guess. But they were Alcoholics Anonymous members. And I met Lenny. And Lenny is a wonderful man. Lenny's about 15 years older than I am, but he doesn't have as much time as me. But I met Lenny, and Lenny told me a story. I don't know, if you see God in here, tell me, or shake your head or something, because I do. He told me a story about a guy he knows who went once a year to an AA meeting to get his medallion. Never went to AA except once a year. And I said to Lenny, "I thought you're supposed to go every week." And Lenny said, "Well, many of us should probably go every day. But that's not what the medallion's for." I said, "What's the medallion for?" He said, "The medallion is for how long since you had a drink." I said, "Well, I haven't had a drink in quite a while." "How long?" At that time, it was 23 years. And he just looked at me kind of funny. And he said, this is Tuesday. And he said, "Thursday night, there's a church in Minnetonka, and we have a meeting there. And why don't you just come to that meeting? Why don't you just show up at that meeting?" So, okay. Got nothing else to do on Thursday night. So I go to that meeting, and Lenny's there, and he gives me a 23-year medallion. My very first AA meeting. Rick kids me all the time about being an instant old-timer. So I got my medallion for 23 years. And Lenny does not remember ever telling me that story. In fact, he doesn't even remember the story. So where that came from, I don't know, but that's what I needed to hear at that time. That was what I needed to have. So I go to Alcoholics Anonymous and I get this medallion. We talk a lot about sponsorship, so I don't mean to offend anybody. If you have a tough sponsor, if you have had that kind of an experience with a sponsor, and a sponsor has helped you by being tough with you, God bless you. God bless you. My youngest kid just asked me the other day to help him find a sponsor. And he said, "It's got to be somebody really tough. And it's got to be somebody who doesn't know you." I'm going to try and talk him into Dustin or Ed or one of these guys, even though they do know me, because I know they'd ring him out pretty good. If that worked for you, I haven't been paying attention. How are we doing here?
You're good.
Okay.
I'll tell you.
Well, if that worked for you, God bless you. That's wonderful. God bless you and your sponsor. That would not have gotten to first base with me. Now, here I am. I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink in 23 years, and I'm not going to let some drunk give me instructions as to how to run my life. Just not going to happen. Now, I'm a successful businessman. Okay, not going to happen. Lenny said the magic words to me. He said, you know what? We do a meeting at the workhouse on Saturday. Magic words. You ready? Why don't you come along? Mm-hmm. Lenny says to me, why don't you come along? What the hell do I want to do that for? But, okay, Saturday, I don't have any commitment on Saturday. I don't have anything to do. And, yeah, why not? It won't hurt me. I can stand an hour of anything. Okay, I'll come along. Saturday at the workhouse. We're going to go over to Detox tomorrow, talk to some guys, put on a meeting. Why don't you come along? Going to pick up somebody, got to get to a meeting. Why don't you come along? Lenny's doing, why don't you come along? Now, I got to tell you, I am absolutely miserable. I have not had a drink in 23 years. I am having, you know, you talk about the low bottom. Well, this, my low bottom was emotional, spiritual. It was not physical. It was a spiritual low bottom. I was pretty much done with everything. I was contemplating, I don't know that I'd ever get as far as suicide, but I was thinking thoughts in that direction. I hated everything. I hated you. I'd sit home in my house and I'd watch my big screen TV and I would hate everything and everybody. I was absolutely miserable. And so Lenny is saying, why don't you come along? And I'm coming along, and you know what? I'm starting to feel better. I don't know why, I just know I'm starting to feel better. Things are starting to look a little better. I'm not making more money, but things are starting to look better. So, in the fullness of time, I go to 2218. I'm going to this meeting with Len, and my son Joe and his girlfriend are going to 2218 to a meeting and expressed a desire that I go there with them. So I went to that meeting with Joe and Karen, and I'm hanging around 2218. And there's a four-step workshop going on. Rick and Chris are doing a four-step workshop at 2218. And I think, you know, this AA stuff isn't too bad. I should maybe get into this a little bit more. So I go to this workshop. And they're talking about writing inventory. I know, the dreaded four-step. Okay, I'm going to talk about the dreaded four-step now. They're talking about writing inventory. And I enjoyed the workshop. It was a 5-week deal, and I enjoyed it. So I went home, and I thought about it. I played around with it. I perhaps had a little small awakening here, a little small awakening there. I don't know. Things were starting to go a little better. And so about, maybe 7-8 months later, they had another four-step workshop, and I thought, well, the first one was kind of cool. You know, I think I'll go to this one too. So I went to that one, and they talked about writing inventory, and I went home and thought about it and gave it a little, might have even opened the book and flipped through a page or two. Why, I will never know. A few months later was an opportunity to do another workshop, and Chris couldn't do it. And Rick asked me if I would sit in and read the book for him during this workshop. And the only thing I can think of is he must have had some kind of, maybe God told him or something, that I really needed it really bad. I can't think of any other reason why he would ask me to do it. So now I'm kind of stuck, because I know that I'm going to be doing a workshop and I'm going to be sitting up there advocating to you guys that you got to go write inventory. Well, I haven't written any inventory. I've been thinking about inventory, but I haven't written any inventory. So I think, you know, I better write some inventory. I better get some paper and I better write some inventory. And I wrote, the very first thing I wrote about was my older son Joe and my younger one Richard, and some problems that we were having. The younger one, Richard, was blaming me for his troubles for many, many years. In fact, I just had a birthday, and I just got a birthday card from him in which he made amends to me, and it was just wonderful. It was just absolutely incredible stuff that he wrote on that card to me. But he had been blaming me for all of his trouble, and he felt that I was holding the older brother up as some sort of an icon that he had to live up to. And he felt tremendous pressure that he felt from me making him have to live up to the older brother. And of course, I wasn't doing anything like that. Not even remotely like that. Never entered my mind. So, you know, I thought, I think I better write some inventory about this and see what happens. You about to flash me the 5 minutes there? Carolyn told me at the beginning of the meeting that she was going to be my controller tonight. I got to tell you that as long as I've known Carolyn, I've lived in fear that she would be my controller someday. So I wrote some inventory. I don't mean to be bragging when I talk about having these Bill Wilson experiences, but I have had several of those kind of experiences. I've had the educational variety wake-up stuff too, but I've had a few of those just wake up now. And I had one when I wrote inventory. I had been thinking about this. If you guys are thinking about writing inventory, for heaven's sakes, get a legal pad and a pen or a pencil and write some stuff down. Please do that. Please do that. Because the what happened part of my story is inventory happened. This is absolutely incredible. I had the experience of seeing that, number one, Richard had accused me of holding Joe up as an icon. Number one, he was absolutely right. I was absolutely doing that. I was putting him under pressure that he had no reason to be under. And I saw it. It just was like all of a sudden, oh yeah. Oh yeah, you are doing that. All that stuff you've been denying all this time. Yeah, you are doing that. And it was amazing. So I started to do the workshop. And I'm very blessed. Rick and I have been doing workshops together for about 10 years now. And I get to live in this. It's not like I do it every once in a while. I get to live in this. I get to live in this process of inventory, this process of self-honesty. You know, we bang around about being honest in AA. Got to be rigorously honest with everybody. Yeah, you've heard that, right? The book doesn't say that. The book says, it's great, be honest with everybody. That's wonderful. But what the big book talks about is being rigorously honest with ourselves. I have to be honest with me. Otherwise, I'm going to see what's wrong with you, and that's not going to do me any good, because what's wrong with me, my mistakes, not my part, my mistakes, are killing me. If I could make a case that hating somebody, trying to get revenge on somebody, would actually hurt that somebody, you could almost justify it. I know it's killing me, but I'm going to get you. You could almost justify it. But it doesn't. It doesn't. It kills me. It makes me miserable. So I'm 23 years dry drunk, and my life sucks, and it's all your fault, and everything's wrong, and I'm not wrong in anything. I haven't made any mistakes at all. It's all the world and you and my clients. You know, I'm self-employed, so I've got clients. And they're just all jerks. They're just all, these clients are just jerks. And I hate them all. So that idea is killing me. So I have to wake up to my mistakes. Read chapter 5, you guys. If you have not read chapter 5, if you have any misinterpretation or lack of understanding of what it says, we put the steps on the wall and we go to treatment places and we hear about making sin lists and all that stuff. Read it out of chapter 5 and see what it says. And it will amaze you. And you know what? We're getting short, aren't we? I heard a couple of speakers from the East yesterday. And they both said, one said straight out and the other alluded to this idea, okay? The steps are not that hard. Okay, it's hard. We talk about hard work. We talk about doing the work. Okay, yes, it's work. It is. Not a cakewalk, it's work. Okay, I agree with that. But the steps are not so hard that I'm going to not do the steps because they're too hard and I'm going to die of untreated alcoholism. I was dying of untreated alcoholism and I hadn't had a drink in 23 years. So tell me that this is not a pretty serious deal. I'm not lying in a gutter with booze all over me. I'm living in a beautiful house that I own, driving a nice car, and I'm dying of untreated alcoholism. So when I say my experience might have been a little different from some of yours, that's what I'm talking about. This alcoholism deal was killing me just as much as it's killing the guy who's sleeping under a bridge. Same thing. So when I look at inventory, and see the really nice thing about inventory is that all the rest of the steps come from that. They come out of that. There's more stuff. Yes, there is more stuff. But in inventory, I learn my character defects. I learn what they are. I see the exact nature of my wrongs so that I can do step 5 and I can go on and do step 6 and step 7. Have you ever had a character defect, something you thought was a character defect and it turned out not to be? Or even better, have you ever had something that you thought was something good about you and it turned out to be a character defect? Huh? I'm very generous. I've always been generous. People all my life told me how generous I am. Bob, you give too much. You're so generous. And you know what? There was always a hook. And I didn't ask for payment. I did not have the expectation of payment at the time. But always underneath my generosity is, after all I've done for you, don't I get what I want after all I've done for you? So that's a defect of character. I don't see it as a defect of character. I think I'm generous, and that, boy, am I, what a wonderful guy I am, you know, because I'm so generous. That's a defect of character. So that's where I find out about those defects. That's where I find out. Now, of course, it's not the complete list of amends, but there's a pretty good list of people. It says in the big book that I have a list of people I've harmed. I got it when I took inventory. So there's a pretty good list of people that I owe amends to. Step 8 and 9. Step 10, I don't know what your take is on step 10. For me, it's continue to do step 4. Continue to take personal inventory. So I don't care what form it's in. I don't care if you write differently or you don't write at all or whatever. Continue to take inventory. When we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, pretty self-explanatory. There is a power. I haven't talked about God. I should, if I had longer, yeah, I got to quit. If I had longer, I would talk about God. God has been extremely important. I apologize for not saying more about it. But that's, I guess, what is it we kid about, Dustin? It's Nike, not Nietzsche. Just do it. So I thank you guys for inviting me here. Thank you, Cheryl, for your opening talk. And there we go. Thanks a lot.